5. In this long, strange, and painful dream he was having, Ev Hillman saw Gardner fall and heard Gardner's thoughts. Forget the whole thing, go to sleep.
Clearly.
Then the dream began to break up, and that seemed good. It was hard to dream. It made him hurt all over, made him ache. And it hurt to combat the green light, if sunlight was too bright. He remembered it a little, sunlight. You could close your eyes, but the green light was inside, always inside. A third eye that saw and a green light that burned. There were other minds here. One belonged to the woman. The other to the less mind, which had once been Peter. Now the less mind could only howl. It howled sometimes for Bobby to come and let it free from the green light. But mostly it only howled as it burned in the torment of the draining. The woman also screamed for release. But sometimes her thoughts cycled into appalling images of hate that Ev could barely stand. So, yes, better. Better. To go to sleep. Easier. And let it all go. But there was David. David was dying. Already his thoughts, which Ev had received clearly at first, were falling into a deepening spiral that would end first in unconsciousness and then swiftly in death. So Ev fought the dark, fought it, and began to call.
Get up! Get up, you, out there in sunlight! I remember sunlight. David Brown deserves his time of sunlight, so get up, get up, get up, get!
6.
Up, get up, get up!
The thought was a steady beat in Gardner's head. No, not a beat. It was something like a car, only the wheels were glass. They were cutting into his brain as the car motored slowly across it.
Deserves his time of sunlight, David Brown, get up, David, get David up, David Brown, get up, David Brown, get up, damn it!
All right,
Gardner muttered through a mouth that was full of blood.
All right, I hear you, leave me alone.
He managed to get to his knees. He tried to get to his feet, the world grayed out. No good. At least the rasping, cutting voice in his head had let up a little. He sensed its owner was somehow looking out of his eyes, using them like dirty windows.
Dreaming through them.
Seeing some of what he saw. He tried to get to his feet again and was again unable.
My asshole quotient is still very high,
Gardner croaked. He spat out 2 teeth and began to crawl through the dirt of the dooryard toward the shed. 7. Haven came after Jim Gardner. They came in cars, they came in pickup trucks, they came on tractors, they came on motorcycles. Mrs. Eileen Crenshaw, the Avon lady who had been so bored at Hilly Brown's second gala magic show, came driving her son Galen's dune buggy. The Reverend Goringer rode behind her, the remaining strands of his graying hair blowing back from his sunburned pate. Vern Jernigan came in a hearse he had been trying to convert into a camper before the Becoming got into high gear. They filled the road. Ashley Raval wove between those on foot like a slalom racer, pedaling his bike like a madman. He had returned home long enough to get something he called a Zap gun. This spring it had only been an outgrown toy, gathering dust in the attic. Now equipped with a 9-volt battery and the circuit board from his little brother's speak and spell, it was a weapon the Pentagon would have found interesting. It blew holes in things. Big holes. This was strapped onto the carrier of his bike, where he had once carried newspapers for delivery. They came in a ripping hurry, and there were some accidents. 2 people were killed when Early Hutchinson's VW collided with a Fannin station wagon, but such minor things stopped no one. Their mental chant filled the hollow spaces in the air with a steady rhythmic cry.
Before he can do anything to the ship, before he can do anything to the ship.
It was a fine summer's day, a fine day for a killing, and if anyone needed killing, it was James Eric Gardner, and so they came, well over 500 of them in all, good country people who had learned some new tricks. They came, and they brought their new weapons with them. 8. By the time Gardner got halfway to the shed, he began to feel better. Perhaps he was getting a second wind. More likely, he supposed, was the possibility that he really had gotten rid of almost all the Valium, and was now starting to get on top of the rest. Or maybe the old man was somehow feeding him strength. Whatever it was enough to get him on his feet again and hopping toward the shed. He clutched at the door for a moment, heart galloping wildly in his chest. He happened to glance down and saw a hole in the door. It was round. The edges stuck out in a jagged bracelet of white splinters. It had a chewed look, that hole.
The vacuum cleaner that ran the buttons. This is how it got out. It had a new and improved cutting attachment. Christ, these people really are crazy.
He worked his way around the building, and a cold certainty came to him. The key would be gone.
Oh, Christ, guard, give it a rest. Why would it?
But it was. It was gone. The nail where it had hung was empty. Gardner leaned against the side of the shed, exhausted and trembling. His body sheened with sweat. He looked down, and the sun gleamed off something on the ground. The key. The nail slanted down a bit. He had put the key back in a hurry, and had probably pulled the nail down a bit in the soft wood himself. It had simply slid off. He bent painfully, picked it up, and began to shamble around to the front again. He was exquisitely aware of how fast time was passing. They would arrive soon. How could he possibly get his business done in the shed and then get out to the ship before they did? Since it was impossible, it was probably best to ignore it. By the time he got back to the shed door, he could hear the faint sound of motors. He stabbed the key at the lock and missed the keyway. The sun was bright, his shadow little more than a puddle hanging from his heels. Again. This time the key socked home. He turned it, shoved the door open, and lurched into the shed. Green light enfolded him. It was strong, stronger than it had been the last time he was here. That big piece of cobbled-together equipment,
the transformer,
was glowing brightly. It was cycling as it had been before, but the cycles were faster now. Thin green fire ran across the silvery road maps of circuit boards. He looked around. The old man, floating in his green bath, was looking back at Gardner with his one good eye. That gaze was tortured, but sane.
Use the transformer to save David.
Old man, they are coming for me. Gardner croaked. I'm out of time.
Corner, far corner.
He looked and saw something that looked a bit like a television antenna, a bit like a large coat hanger mobile, and a bit like those backyard devices on which women hang clothes, turning them to do so.
That?
Take it out into the dooryard.
Gardner didn't question. There was no time. The thing stood on a small square platform. Gardner supposed its circuits and batteries were in that. Close up, he saw that the things which looked like the bent arms of a TV antenna were really narrow steel tubes. He seized the central pole. The thing wasn't heavy, but it was awkward. He was going to have to put some weight on his shattered ankle, like it or not. He looked back at the tank in which Ed Hillman floated.
You sure about this, old-timer?
But it was the woman who answered. Her eyes opened. Looking into them was like looking into the witch's cauldron in Macbeth. For a moment, Gard forgot all his pain and weariness and sickness. He was held in thrall by that poisoned gaze. In that instant, he understood all the truth and all the power of the fearsome woman Bobby had called Sissy, and the reason Bobby had fled from her as from a fiend. She was a fiend. She was a witch. And even now, in her fearful agony, her hate held.
Take it, you stupid man. I'll run it.
Gardner put his hurt foot down and screamed as a savage hand reached all the way up from his ankle to seize the soft double sack of his testicles. The old man.
Wait, wait.
It rose on its own. Not far, only an inch or two. The green swamp light brightened even more.
You'll have to guide it, son.
This he was able to manage. It wavered across the green shed like the skeleton of a crazy beach umbrella, nodding and dipping, casting weird elongated shadows on the walls and floor. Gardner hopped clumsily after it, not wanting, not daring, to look back into that insane woman's eyes. Over and over his mind played the single thought.
Bobby Anderson's sister was a witch. A witch. A witch.
He guided the bobbing umbrella out into the sunlight. 9. Freeman Moss arrived first. He swung the pulp truck in which Gard had once hitched a ride into Bobby's dooryard and was out almost before the laboring, farting engine had died. And by Christ, Chummy, if the cocksucker wasn't right there, front and center, holding onto something that looked like a woman's clothes whirligig. Man looked like a winded runner. He was holding one of his feet, the left up like a dog with a thorn in his paw. That sneaker was bright red, dripping blood.
Looks like Bobby put at least one good one into you, you snake.
Her murdering pal apparently heard the thought. He looked up and smiled wearily. He was still holding onto the whirligig with a platform stand on the bottom. He was supporting himself on it. Freeman walked toward him, leaving the driver's door of the old truck hanging open. There was something childlike and winning in the man's grin, and in a moment Freeman understood what it was. With his missing teeth, it was like the Halloween pumpkin grin of a little boy.
Jesus, I sort of liked you. Why'd you have to be such a fuck-up?
What you doing out here, Freeman? Gardner asked.
You should have stuck home. Watch the Red Sox. The fence is all whitewashed.
You son of a whore.
Moss was wearing a down-filled vest, but no shirt beneath. The vest was simply the first thing to come to hand as he rushed out of the house. Now he brushed it aside, revealing not a gimmick or a gadget, but a Colt Woodsman. He pulled it out. Gardner stood looking at him, holding the whirligig's post foot up.
Close your eyes. I'll make it quick. I can do that, at least.
10.
Get down, asshole. Get down, or you'll lose your head when he loses his. I don't give a 10 shit who goes, so get down if you want to live.
In the tank, Ann Anderson's eyes blazed with stricken hate and fury. Her teeth were gone, but her bare gums ground together, and a trail of small bubbles floated up. The light pulsed faster and faster like a carousel speeding up. It became strobe light. The hum rose to a low electric moan, and there was a rich smell of ozone in the shed's air. On the one lit VDT screen, the word program was replaced with destroy. It began to flash rapidly over and over again.
Get down, asshole, or stay up. I don't care which.
11. Gardner ducked. His bad foot hit the ground. Pain leapt up his leg again. He dropped into the dust on his hands and knees. Over his head, the whirligig began to spin, slowly at first. Moss stared at it, the gun sagging slightly for a moment in his hand. Realization crossed his face during the last instant he still had one. Then the slender pipe spilled green fire into the dooryard. For a moment, the beach umbrella illusion was perfect and complete. It looked exactly like a big green one that has been partially lowered so that its circular hem touches the ground. But this umbrella was made of fire, and guard crouched below it, eyes squinted, one hand in front of his face, grimacing as if from strong heat. But there was no heat, at least not here, underneath Sissy's poison toadstool. Freeman Moss was at the edge of the parasol. His pants blazed up, then the down vest. For a moment the flames were green, then they flared yellow. He screamed and staggered backward, dropping the gun. Over Gardner's head, the whirligig spun faster. The skeletal metal arms, which had drooped comically downward, were pulled more and more erect by centrifugal force. The parasol's fire hem belled outward, and Moss's shoulders and face were enveloped in sheeting flame as he backed away. In Guard's head, that hideous mental wailing began again. He tried to block it out, but there was no way. Simply no way. He caught a wavery glimpse of a face running like warm chocolate, then covered his face like a kid at a scary movie. The flame spun around Bobby's dooryard in a widening gyre, making a black spiral of dooryard dirt fuse into a gritty sort of glass. Moss's pulp truck and Bobby's blue pickup were both in the thing's final circumference. The shed was barely beyond it, although its shape danced like a demon in a heat haze. It was very hot at the edge of the circle, if not where Guard crouched. No doubt of that. The paint on the hood of Moss's truck and on the sides of the pickup first bubbled, then blackened, then burst into flame, burning down to clean white steel. The litter of bark, sawdust, and wood chips in the back of Moss's truck blazed up like dry kindling in a wood stove. The two big trash barrels in Bobby's pickup, made of heavy pressed gypsum, also caught fire and burned like sconces. The dark circle at the edge of the fire parasol's range became a brand in the shape of a saucer. The army blanket covering the torn seat in the cab of Moss's truck sprang alight. Then the seat covers beneath, then the tindery stuffing. Now the entire cab was flickery furnace orange, with the skeletons of springs peering up through the glare. Freeman Moss staggered backward, twisting and turning, looking like a movie stuntman who has forgotten his flame suit. He collapsed. 12. Even overmastering Moss's dying screams, Ann Anderson's mental cry,
"Eat shit and die! Eat shit and..."
Then suddenly, something let go in whatever remained of her. There was a final brilliant flare of green light, a sustained pulse that lasted nearly 2 seconds. The heavy hum of the transformer rose a notch, and every board in the shed picked it up and rattled in sympathetic vibration. Then the hum dropped back to its former sleepy drone. Anne's head slumped forward in the liquid, her hair trailing like that of a drowned woman. On the computer screen, destroy winked out like a blown candle and became program again. 13. The fiery parasol wavered, then disappeared. The whirligig, which had been spinning at a mad rate, began to slow, squeaking rhythmically, like an unlatched gate in a mild breeze. The pipe sank back to their former angle. It squeaked once more. then stopped. The gas tank of Bobby's truck suddenly exploded. More yellow flames spouted at the sky. Guard felt a piece of metal whiz by him. He raised his head and stared stupidly at the blazing truck, thinking,
Bobby and I used to go to the Starlight Drive-In over in Derry in that truck sometimes. I think we even got laid there once during some stupid Ryan O'Neill picture. What happened? Lord, what happened?
In his mind, the old man's voice, almost exhausted but somehow imperative.
Quick, I can power the transformer when the rest come, but you got to be quick. The boy, David. Quick, man. Not much time,
Gardner thought wearily.
Jesus, there never is.
He started back toward the open door of the shed, sweating, cheeks waxy pale. He paused at that dark, burned ring in the dirt, and then hopped clumsily over it. He somehow didn't want to touch it. He tottered on the edge of balance and then managed to hop on. As he made his way back inside the shed, the twin gas tanks of Moss's truck went up with a furious roar. The cab tore free of the body. The truck flipped over on its side like a tiddlywink. Burning chunks of seat cover and seat stuffing began to float out of the open passenger window and floated upward like blazing feathers. Most fell back into the dooryard and went out. A few, however, wafted their way over to the porch, and three or four actually floated through the open door on the first faint puff of the easterly wind which would soon come up. One of these burning cotton puffs alighted on a paperback novel which Gardner had left on the table just inside the door a week ago. The cover caught on fire. In the living room, another burning fragment of seat stuffing lit up a rag rug which Mrs. Anderson had made in her bedroom and sent surreptitiously to Bobby one day when Anne was gone. When Jim Gardner came out of the shed again, the entire house was on fire. 14. The light in the shed was at its lowest level ever, a dim and watery green, the color of stagnant pond water. Gardner looked cautiously toward Anne, afraid of those blazing eyes. But there was nothing to be afraid of. She only floated, head bent forward as if in deep thought, her hair trailing upward.
She's dead, son. If you're going to get the boy, it has to be now. I don't know how long I can provide the power. And I can't be divided with half of myself looking out for them and half running the transformer.
He stared out at Gardner, and Gard felt deep pity and admiration for the old bastard's brute courage. Could he have done half as much, gone half as far, if their positions had been reversed? He doubted it.
You're in a lot of pain, aren't you? I ain't exactly feeling in the pink, son, if that's what you mean. But I'll get through it. If you get going, that is.
Get going. Yes, he had dilly-dallied too long. Far too long. His mouth popped open in another wrenching yawn, and then he stepped toward the equipment in and around that orange crate. What the old man called the transformer. Program? The keyless computer screen beckoned. Hillman could have told Gardner what to do, but Gardner didn't need to be told. He knew. He also remembered the nosebleed and the blast of sound he'd taken as a result of his single experiment with Moss's levitation gadget. This made that thing look like a box of Lincoln Logs. Still, he had gone quite a ways down the path to becoming himself since then, like it or not. He would just have to hope it was enough.
Oh, shit, son. Hold the phone. We got company.
Then a louder voice overrode Hillman, a voice Guard vaguely recognized but could not put a name to.
Back off. Back off. Hold on, all of you. Just one or maybe two.
That was the old man's exhausted metal voice again. Gardner felt his concentration go out to the whirligig in the dooryard. In the shed, the light began to grow bright once more. And the killing pulses began. 15. Dick Allison and Newt Berenger were still 2 miles from Bobby's place when Freeman Moss's mental shrieks began. Moments before, they had swerved past Elt Barker. Now Dick looked up into the rearview mirror and saw Elt Harley swerve across the road and go leaping through the air. For a moment, Elt looked like Evel Knievel, white hair or no. Then he separated from the bike and landed in the scrub. Newt hit the brakes with both feet, and his truck screamed to a stop in the middle of the road. He looked at Dick with large eyes that were both frightened and furious.
Son of a bitch has got a gadget. Yeah, fire, some kind of...
Abruptly, Dick raised his metal voice to a shout. Newt picked it up, amplified it. From Kyle Archenborg's Cadillac, Kyle and Hazel McCready joined in.
Back off. Back off. Hold on, all of you.
They stopped, holding their positions. They were not great takers of orders as a rule, these Tommyknockers, but Moss's hideous screams, fading now, were great persuaders. All stopped, that was, except for a blue Oldsmobile Delta 88 with a bumper sticker on the back reading, Realtors sell it by the acre. When the command came to back off and hold position, Andy Bozeman was already in sight of the Anderson place. His hate had grown exponentially. Gardner lying bleeding and dead was all he could think of. He came slewing into Bobby's driveway in a wild power turn. The Olds' rear end broke free when Bozeman stamped the brake. The big car nearly tipped over.
I'll whitewash your fence, you fucking asshole. I'll give you a dead rat and a string to swing it on. Oh, you bastard!
His wife pulled the molecule exciter out of her purse. It looked like a Buck Rogers blaster, which had been created by a fairly bright lunatic. Its frame had once been part of a garden tool marketed under the trade name of Weed Eater. She leaned out the car window and pulled the trigger utterly at random. The east end of Bobby's farmhouse exploded into a cauldron of fire. Ida Bozeman grinned a cheerful, reptilian grin. As the Bozemans began to get out of the old, the whirligig started to spin. A moment later, the green parasol of flame began to form. Ida Bozeman tried to aim what she called her molecule disco at it, but too late. If her first shot had hit the whirligig instead of the house, everything might have been different, but it didn't. The two of them went up like fire trees. A moment later, the Olds exploded with three payments still due on it. 16. Now, with the screams of Freeman Moss just beginning to fade from their minds, the screams of Andy and Ida Bozeman took their place. Newt and Dick waited them out, grimacing. At last, they faded. Ahead, Dick Allison could see other vehicles parked on both sides of Route 9, and in the middle. Frank Spruce was leaning out of the cab of his big tanker truck, looking toward Newt and Dick urgently. They sensed the others, all the others, on this road, on other roads. Some were standing in the fields they had been cutting across, all of them waiting for something. Some decision. Dick turned toward Newt.
Fire. Yes, fire. Can we put it out?
There was a short mental silence as Newt thought about it. Dick could sense him wanting to simply push it aside and go on to where Gardner was. What Dick wanted wasn't complicated. He wanted to rip out Jim Gardner's gizzard. But that wasn't the answer, and they both knew it. All the shed people, even Adley, knew it. The stakes were higher now, and Dick was confident Jim Gardner was going to lose his gizzard anyway, in one fashion or another. Crossing the Tommyknockers was a bad idea. It made them mad. This was a truth many races on other worlds had found out long before today's festivities in Haven. He and Newt both looked out toward the tree-bordered field where Elk Barker had crashed. The grasses and the plumes of the trees were blowing, not hard, but clearly blowing in a wind which blew from east to west. Not even enough breeze to qualify as a kappa wind, but Dick thought it showed signs of brisking.
Yes, we can put out the fire.
Newt replied at last.
Stop the fire in the drunk, too? Can we be sure of that?
Another long thinking pause, and then Newt came to the answer that Dick had already suspected.
I don't know if we can do both. I know one or the other, but I don't know if we can do both. Then we'll let the fire burn for now. We'll let it burn, yes, all right. The ship will be all right. The ship will not be hurt. And the wind, the way the wind's blowing.
They looked at each other, grinning as their thoughts came together in a moment of utter chiming harmony. One voice, one mind.
The fire will be between him and the ship. He won't be able to get to the ship.
On the roads and in the fields, the people listening in on this party line all relaxed slightly.
He won't be able to get to the ship. Is he still in the shed? Yes.
Newt turned his puzzled, troubled face to Dick.
What the fuck's he doing in there? Does he have something, making something, something to hurt the ship?
There was a pause, and then Dick's voice, not just to Newt Beringer, but to all the shed people, clear and imperative.
Let your minds,
Net your minds with ours. All who can, net your minds with ours and listen. Listen for Gardner. Listen.
They listened. In the hot summer silence of the early afternoon, they listened. Two or three ridges over, the first smudges of smoke rose into the sky. 17. Gardner felt them listening. There was a horrid crawling sensation over the surfaces of his brain. It was ridiculous, but it was happening. He thought,
now I know how a streetlight must feel with a lot of moths fluttering around it.
The old man moved in his tank, trying to catch Gardner's eye. He missed his eye, but caught his mind. Gardner looked up.
Never mind, son. They want to know what you're up to, but forget them. Won't hurt if they find out. Might even help. Slow them down. Relieve their minds. They don't care about David, only about the goddamn ship. Go on, son, go on.
Gardner was standing by the transformer and holding one of the earplugs in his hand. He didn't want to put it in. He felt like a man who's gotten a hefty shock from one particular switchplate, who is compelled to touch that same switchplate again.
Do I really have to wear this fucker? I changed the screen just by thinking before. Yes, and that's all you can do. You got to wear it, son, I'm sorry.
Incredibly, Gardner's eyelids were growing heavy again. He had to force them up.
I'm afraid it will kill me,
he thought of the old man, and then waited, hoping the old man would contradict him. But there was nothing. Only the pained eye looking at him and the dim slish, slish, slish of the equipment.
Yeah, it may kill me. And he knows it, too.
Outside, dimly, he could hear the crackle of fire. The fluttering feeling along the surfaces of his mind stopped. The moths had flown away. Reluctantly, Gardner put the plug in his ear. End of side 17. To continue, turn the cassette over.